Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Whitson and Joe Castellano.
Well, Ray, another improbable win for the Golden State Warriors. It seems like we've done some podcasts in this same situation before. We had the Clippers game where the Warriors were down big, the Lakers game, and the Warriors came back and won that game as well. And this time they were down at one point 19 against the Heat. They kind of looked dead for a lot of the game. And a game where they're playing without their centers, they're playing without Draymond Green, they win in overtime, 120-112. And most importantly, you know, I mentioned the centers and Draymond Green, but most importantly, Steph Curry was having one of his worst shooting performances of his career from three-point range anyway, and they still come out with a victory. I don't know how they pulled this off, but they did.
Well, they pulled it off because Steph got just hot enough in the fourth quarter. And yeah, he was having one of his worst games. I think at one point he was like 1 for 10, 1 for 11 from three-point range.
And yeah, he was 2 for 15 in the first three quarters.
Hey, but he made 3 of 5
right
in the fourth quarter and in overtime and made just enough plays, and he got some help. I mean, Kelly Oubre was very solid tonight. Kent Bazemore played probably his best game as a Warrior.
Great game. In fact, let's hear what Steve Kerr had to say about Bazemore after the game.
Baze is great. I mean, he's frenetic out there. He plays with great energy. He's you know, kind of all over the map. He has his moments where, you know, he makes plays that, you know, where he gets out of control, and but he also makes really athletic, powerful moves to the rim, and, you know, steals and fast break layups and dunks, and so he's the kind of player who makes an impact. You know, he's just going to come out there and make a difference. And tonight I thought he was the difference, frankly. You know, his play in the second half really, really was the key.
And what about the other contributors, Ray?
Pascal helped lead the comeback coming off the bench. Of course, Wiggins had the clutch corner three off the Steph drive and assist late. So, you know, Steph got some help tonight, and this is what he's going to need. And, you know, the nice thing about it was that the ball was moving in the second half. Much better ball movement than in the first half. And, you know, that's where you felt like you missed Draymond. And, of course, you miss him at the defensive end, especially against a team like the Heat that can score more in the paint because they have that advantage. Kind of an improbable win in some ways, but in other ways you say to yourself, well, first of all, when you have Steph Curry, you've got the best player on the floor when you're playing the Heat. Jimmy Butler is a fine player, but Steph's the best player on the floor. And the team with the best player on the floor always should have a chance to win. And when you have Steph Curry, you always have a puncher's chance. And, you know, even on a night where he was off, and you know, I saw Steve Kerr in the ESPN interview between quarters, and, you know, we've both seen this a million times where Steph can be ice cold, but then he can get going in a flash. And he can go from zero to nuclear with just a couple of shots. So he did that, you know, late in the game. And, of course, that three over Kendrick Nunn in overtime to seal it. Everybody saw that coming. Everybody who was watching, everybody in the gym saw it coming, and he still got it done. And that's what the great ones do. Guys like him, guys like Damian Lillard, who's doing incredible things as well. And Nunn, you know, he could take Nunn off the dribble. There was no doubt about it. But Nunn actually played good defense on that play.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He was there. He was there to contest. But Steph's release is so incredibly quick. And, you know, this is the thing he's been working on ad nauseum for years now. And, you know, that's why he has supreme confidence even when the shots aren't falling.
Yeah, so I mean, when he took that, Ray, I didn't think it was a good shot. I was like, you're up by three. You don't really need a three. He's got a guy with his arm right in his face, but it's Steph Curry. It's like there's only a handful of players that you want to take a three in that situation. Otherwise, I didn't think it was a good shot to take.
Well, no, they probably could have gotten by with him driving to the hoop and maybe creating an opportunity for somebody else. But all things being equal, I want the ball in Steph's hand. And really, in the fourth quarter late, you know, it was like they were forgetting about Steph. And fortunately, other guys were putting the ball in the bucket. But you know, you want Steph with the ball in these crunch situations if you can. And so he did get it late, and he had the drive and the great drawing of the defense to give Wiggins enough room for the corner three, and then he kind of sealed things. And I don't think anybody on that team had a problem with Steph having the ball, in those final seconds to hit the dagger shot. But he got some help. I mean, Wiggins had 23, Oubre had 23, Bazemore had 26 to lead the Warriors in scoring, and a very, very satisfying win, a very brutal loss for the Heat. And here the Warriors, all of a sudden, three games over 500, and they have a chance to get more, make a little more distance with 500, and at least solidify that eighth spot in the West. And we can start talking about that now as we edge closer to midway in the regular season.
Yeah, well, they've won three of their last four. I mean, this was improbable the way things were going because, I mean, in the first half, it looked like they were pretty satisfied to just jack up threes, and Steph wasn't hitting them, and other players weren't hitting threes, and they ended up attempting 52 threes where they had 43 two-point attempts. So it was about the threes. They didn't have anybody inside that they could go to. They didn't have Draymond Green, you know, helping to facilitate the offense. So it looked like kind of a stagnant, just jack up the threes kind of offense. But when it came time to really make the plays, not only did Steph hit his shots, but Bazemore, I mean, driving to the basket, being really aggressive, Pascal as well. And how about Pascal playing so much too, because he played the entire fourth quarter and overtime, and I think even a little bit in the third. So I think he played something like 20 straight minutes that he was out on the court, and he really helped out a lot.
Well, that's a good step forward for Pascal, because it clearly his knee's been bothering him. But he did log 32 minutes tonight and had some big moments there late in the game. It ends up with 11 points and 7 rebounds and 3 assists and a plus 10. A pretty tidy game for him, and he's not played well lately, and it appeared like, you know, he's not a high flyer anyway. He's got for a guy his size, he's got a pretty earthbound game. I mean, he can dunk it and all that, but he's an interesting guy in that regard. And with the knee bothering him, I think it really kind of slowed him down. He looked a little more sprightly in this game, and that's got to be encouraging. And they needed that from him, for sure, as well as what they got from Bazemore off the bench. And that's about all they got from the bench. Damian Lee's in a real shooting slump right now, and I'm still not sure what Wanamaker does. I don't really know what he does, except for he consumes minutes. But of course, that's about it. You know, I mean, can they find a better backup point guard? I don't know. I thought this guy was better than he's shown so far, and maybe he'll. You know, have bounce back second half, but haven't seen much from him so far. That's why you hear a lot of talk about guys like Jeremy Lin in the G League and whether they make a trade, maybe bolster the bench a little bit. But the bottom line here is this roster has been a little exposed because they've got guys like Smilagic and Jordan Poole. And, you know, when you have guys getting hurt, all of a sudden your roster is looking really thin because you've committed it to long-term players like that. So, you know, that means you have to sort of fill and patch where you can to complete the roster. And when guys get hurt, that gets exposed. However, they've gotten a few guys to step up just enough against a Miami team that's really struggling. Just a very satisfying win. And you talked about the Clippers win and the Lakers win. This one, even though they're not as good, beating the Heat in this way was as good a win as they've had this year.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that was in the NBA Finals last year. They're not the same team, that's for sure. They definitely have had their struggles, especially of late. I mean, Jimmy Butler did, you know, still have a really good game for them overall with the rebounds and assists. I mean, he was good at passing the ball, I thought. But Andre Iguodala, I mean, he was really kind of the headline player coming in because of his years with the Warriors, and you know, he made an impact, but it wasn't so much, you know, Andre against Steph like you'd like to think. I mean, a couple of times they went up against each other, but really it wasn't such a, you know, a one-on-one matchup. But it was good to see Iguodala out there. I mean, he's still a valuable player for the Heat.
Yeah, love to see him back on the Warriors, you know, probably in a more limited role than he'd had the last few years. By the way, tonight he played 20 minutes and had a minus 19.
Yeah.
Is that not you know, he scored 10 points off the bench, but it was not his best effort. And, you know, this isn't the Iguodala of a few years ago, but I think he'd be such a great fit for the Warriors, and maybe they can make that happen for next year if he decides to play another year, or they have to make a deal. I don't know what his contract situation is right now with Miami, to tell you the truth, but it'd be nice to make that happen. And then you get Klay Thompson back, and it'd be kind of like you're getting the band back together for one last hurrah. But that's down the road. You know, this team right now, and we talked about it last week and a couple of weeks ago, what are they doing with this season? What kind of team are they? And, you know, we're still finding that out, but you're getting some promising moments as well as some setbacks. But they have a chance in this stretch of the schedule to really set the tone for the second half of the year. They can get 5 or 6 games over 500 and start gaining some confidence here, and then getting Wiseman back, getting Draymond healthy, hopefully this weekend. I know they have a back-to-back. And then you've got Kevon Looney as well, and it sounds like he might get back at some point during the road trip. And then getting Steph a little bit of help. Now, he got some tonight, but does he get it consistently? I don't know. Another guy who can space the floor, maybe better than Mulder can or Wanamaker or Lee, to just kind of help Curry out a little bit more. But, you know, with Draymond out there and the team a little bit healthier, hey, you know, they're a threat. They're a threat to make the playoffs, and then with their experience, they're a threat to do a little bit of damage. I don't think anybody's saying that there's a championship contender or anything like that, you know, pending deals before the trade deadline. And it comes back to, what does the front office think this team is? Well, they're giving them a little more reason to believe, which might influence a decision or two before the trade deadline.
Here's what I'm thinking, Ray, is that, you know, as far as the rebounding and the defense, it's been inconsistent. And I mean, of course, they're missing Wiseman and Looney, and that would make a big difference as far as defense and rebounding. And without Draymond Green, it's almost a miracle that they won this game. I still can't believe it as we're sitting here. But I mean, as far as Miami is concerned, with Adebayo, he scores 24. Maybe he should have scored 40. I mean, the Warriors didn't have anybody to guard him inside. But I think overall, just the overall team defense and rebounding has to be more consistent. They came up big at the end to win this game, but those are the areas. I mean, they don't lock down defensively until really they need to. It seems like, you know, they're putting themselves in such a hole because they're not playing consistent defense, and they're not getting, you know, the defensive rebounds that they need to. A lot of times these teams come in and they're, you know, getting 2 or 3 opportunities, you know, for scoring, and you just can't afford to do that.
Well, they're so undersized right now, the Warriors are. They've had to play small ball, and then they had to play mini-me ball tonight. I mean, with nobody taller than Oubre out there, really, or Toscano Anderson. And like I said, Jimmy Butler's taller than all of them, and he's like the 6th tallest Miami Heat player. So they're at a disadvantage in that regard. And I think the Heat tried for a while to, you know, get it in the paint and take advantage of that, but they didn't take enough of an advantage. And the Warriors did give up 36 in the first quarter. That was not good, but I think their defensive effort was much better in the second half, and they only gave up 51 points. And this is now a top 10 defense, you know, despite all the problems they've had. And, you know, they have problems against Brooklyn, which is a super talented team, and they've had 2 real bad defensive games against them. But, I mean, you take those out, and they're respectable. And they should continue to be as they learn to play with each other and learn to communicate. And, of course, having Draymond out there makes a big difference as well. He's not, you know, he's not Defensive Player of the Year, Draymond, necessarily. I mean, we see that from time to time. But he is getting, you know, he's getting a little older. It's a lot of mileage. But he's gotten in better shape now. And you know, hopefully the knee and ankle issues don't linger and become a problem as the season goes on. That's something I think the Warriors have to be mindful about, as they have to with Curry. And, you know, he played 42 minutes tonight, but he had to. And this is what we talked about as far as his minutes. You know, even before the overtime, he was logging 37 in this game, and thank goodness he did.
Yeah.
Because there are just certain games that they really need him. And I think it's the difference between a win and a loss. And we kind of, you know, made fun of Steve Kerr saying, "I'm not chasing wins." And I don't know if that was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because, I mean, when you have a prime year of Steph Curry, and right now, you know, even with the off-shooting night tonight, he's playing at a level he was at his unanimous MVP year. I mean, he's got to be at the front of the line in the conversation for MVP, what he's doing with his team so far this year. But, you know, you do have to be mindful of his minutes. But at the same time, as we talked about last week, you know, that a minute or two here, if it gets you a win, you got to weigh that out and say, yes, it's worth it. How does that pile up over the year? Well, first of all, it's a shorter year. Second of all, Steph is well-rested from the last year or so. So I think they've done that now. They've extended him a little bit, and it's made a difference. And it's brought them a couple of wins.
Yeah. And what about Steph always having belief in himself to hit big shots, even when he's having an off night? Steve Kerr talked about that.
I just think he hasn't just built up his body and his skill over the years. I think he's built up his mind, and he's so strong-willed that he doesn't let things bother him. And he knows that the law of averages are going to play out. He has so much belief in his shot that he's going to keep shooting. It's the same reason he shoots three-quarter court shots when there's still time on the clock. He doesn't care about the percentage. He actually believes that's a shot he can make, so he takes it. And same thing applies when he's in the midst of a tough night. He always believes the next one is going in. He's got an incredibly powerful belief in himself.
What about the Kerr-Kelly Oubre relationship? We've been on Oubre a little bit because his shot selection and sometimes inexplicable plays that he's made. But you know what? Steve Kerr stayed with him, and you got to hand it to him. I mean, I saw a tweet from Tim Kawakami, and I couldn't have agreed more that I was on board with, hey, let's start Damian Lee. Remember that podcast? And, you know, yeah. I'm wrong. Steve Kerr is right that, you know, Lee is now in a slump, and now that they stayed with Oubre, you know, it's paying dividends. He's going to have his ups and downs. I'm not saying he's having a great year, but he definitely deserves to start, you know, especially over Damian Lee.
Yeah, because what he does defensively as well, and the fact that he does have that wingspan and can cover the wings defensively and can also be a shot blocker inside from time to time. You know, it looked pretty bad a couple of weeks ago. It had gotten to the point about 20 games in where you're wondering, you know, what this guy is about, because, and we said it a couple of times, he's a better player. The back of the basketball card says he's a better player than he's shown, although it's a low bar to clear. Well, everything about his game has improved in the last couple of weeks. And so Oubre talked about how the coaching staff and the players have stuck with him and brought him encouragement that kind of helped keep his spirits up. And now he's responded, because the players are smart. They know who he is. They've played against him. They know he can be an effective player. He was just learning his way with his team, and it was painful at times. There's no doubt about it. But he seems to have gotten into a good groove now, seems to understand the offense a little better, the motion offense. And on top of that, has gained his confidence shooting, especially that right corner three, which is, you know, for a left-hander, that means it's a psychological thing where the backboard, you know, where you're looking at it at the side, it's not blocking you as much. I know a lot of right-handed shooters like the left corner, a lot of left-handed shooters like the right corner. I don't think it matters to Steph Curry so much, but some people are funny that way. But he's getting that left corner three down, and I think that the team understands that, and he understands where to be now to make himself available for that shot. So it's a whole lot better than it was, and it's one of the reasons the Warriors are three games over 500. I was really thinking at one point, maybe the Warriors were too, that it was going to be time to deal him. And, you know, there was a lot of chatter about New Orleans possibly sending Josh Reddick and Lonzo Ball to the Bay Area, which at the time I thought, yeah, let's do it. You get another shooter for Steph with Reddick, and you get a good ball handler with the second unit for Lonzo Ball. But you give up some things as well defensively. And Oubre is one of the reasons they're a top 10 defensive team now. So, you know, I never like to see a player come to a new city, a new team, and fail. But you had to be honest about what direction Oubre was going for the first 20 games or so. It just didn't look like it was going to fit. But to his great credit, he's kept his chin up, kept his attitude going and seems to be a more mature player than he was a few years ago on top of everything else. So getting him now at this point of his career, I think he was well equipped to deal with what he had to deal with in terms of the shooting slump. And I mean, he had a horrible shooting percentage in the first month of the season. But he's a different player now. He's apparently ditched the old version of Kelly Oubre. The new one is a lot more efficient and is getting it done at both ends of the floor. So, I mean, he's going to have to play well for them to be a playoff contender, that's for sure.
Speaking of joining new teams, the other day after the game, Draymond Green was talking about, you know, players that are getting ready to get traded and a double standard that he feels exists. And, I mean, it's definitely created a firestorm on Twitter because a lot of people feel that Draymond Green was sort of stepping out of bounds there because, you know, if you're on a team and they want to trade you, they don't want you to get injured, you know, and they want you to still have trade value. And the player that, you know, he was upset about was Andre Drummond of the Cleveland Cavs, just, you know, sitting out of the lineup. And, you know, basically Draymond was saying that with James Harden, you know, he was being criticized because he wanted to be traded. Now you have a player who's going to get traded and nobody's criticizing the team. And I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, NBA players are paid really well. I don't know that they have to have a say all the time in whether or not they're going to get traded. So 99% of the time, Ray, I'm with the players rather than owners or management. But this time, I'm not on Draymond's side. You know, I love Draymond, and I love that he speaks his mind and everything. But on this one, I don't know. I'd have to be convinced, you know, that this is really the wrong thing for the Cavs to do. They want to trade the guy. They don't want him to get hurt.
Well, I can see that. I think what he's talking about is, when somebody does speak out about getting traded, that they're criticized, and that's the double standard. You know, teams are going to do what they're going to do with players, right? And you know, especially a valuable piece like Drummond, you want to make sure that he retains that value and that you get something back in return. I get that, although the trade deadline is still a little bit away. And, you know, it seems like a long time for him to sit. It seems a little bit like a waste, but at the same time, if you think you're going to be able to swing the deal fairly soon, yeah, I don't blame a team for sitting a guy, but I think what Draymond's trying to say is, all right, if you're going to do that to a player and have him sit, don't criticize another player on another team that wants to get traded. I think that was his kind of whole point of pointing out the double standard.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Harden, and we talked about it, and I think he got traded the very same night that we did the podcast, that it was coming to an end there. It was just the whole situation was sour. You know, you've got the player, the star player, and the owner butting heads, and then you got a changing of the guard in the front office and the coaching staff, and it was just time to go. So I've seen it before a million times in the league, and listen, it's a player's league, so in those situations, somebody who's as big a star as Harden, it doesn't shock me that they're going to speak out. And he got a deal. You know, I mean, there are certain players in this league who can be movers and shakers. I mean, LeBron's one of those for sure. But I don't think it makes the game or the product any less entertaining, unless, of course, you're in Houston. It's a lot less entertaining now. But that sort of stuff, I mean, with the players, it doesn't bother me that much when they speak out about that. You know, they definitely are in a leverage situation, maybe more so than other sports. Much more of a players' league. The players here have a lot more influence over their, you know, their fate, their course of their career.
Yeah.
But I don't have a huge problem with that because these guys are incredibly talented and this league is incredibly popular because of him, and it's popular around the world. So you got to take that into account as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the problem for me, Ray, is that, you know, Green was talking about that as a player, you're the worst person in the world when you want a different situation, and I don't think you are. I mean, I know that, you know, on social media it made appear that way, and with James Harden, you know, but it is an ugly situation when you want out and you haven't been traded yet, and you're sitting there with that team.
It's bad.
The same thing happened with Anthony Davis in New Orleans. He wants out. It doesn't happen right away. Then eventually everybody's happy when it happens. Look, Harden's now going to be the happiest guy in the world with the Nets, and Davis, you know, he just got hurt, but he's happy with the Lakers. He won a championship. It's just that period of time there, that, you know, interim period where you're just sitting there and nobody likes the situation, and there's not much you could do about it.
Oh, it's awkward. It's awkward as hell. But, you know, then you have to ask, well, how did it get to that situation? What decisions did you make that put that player in a space where he just wanted to go? Because all things being equal, you want the player to be successful and have things surrounding him that will make you a good team and maybe a championship team. And for the Rockets, it just never quite happened. And, you know, the fit with Westbrook was awkward as well. I mean, it really was awkward. And I think he's found a much better fit with Brooklyn, believe it or not. Because there are nights when Kyrie's out there where he can be the scorer. There are nights when Kyrie and Durant are there and he can be the facilitator. He's actually a pretty good passer. And Brooklyn has some guys who can defend, and Harden doesn't have to worry as much about that. But, you know, that's the way it is in this league. It's that way with the Warriors, why I talk about Curry. What are you doing to make him happy, to make sure that the team is competitive around him? You have to understand that that's your top priority, because, you know, you lose a guy like Curry, you lose a guy like Harden, and things go south. That's just Davis leaves New Orleans, things went south, and they're kind of in the rebuilding mode. That's just the honest truth about it. It's a player's league, and especially with the top-tier star players, they're shot callers. And you know what? I don't mind that, because, you know, if you want to be entertained by these great players, you want them on your team, you do what it takes. Joe Lacob, up to this point, has done what it takes.
Yeah.
And that's why I ask, you know, before the trade line again, what are the Warriors going to do for Curry to make this work out? He seems pretty happy right now. I mean, he was definitely charged up after that win tonight. And I think they've gotten some players around him that are a good cultural fit. And, you know, he knows Bazemore well, and he knows a few of these other guys pretty well now. And I think Toscano Anderson is a good example of a cultural fit. Damian Lee, that'd be another one. But in the end, is it going to translate into wins and losses? If it starts going south for the team with a player whose contract is coming up fairly soon, you damn got to make sure that they're going to be happy.
Yeah,
it's just the fact of the matter. And you know, there's a lot of fan bases are in two camps. They're either pro player or they're pro owner. And it's always amazing to me, no matter what sport it is, how many fans are pro owner.
That is amazing to me. I don't know why, but yeah.
These guys are billionaires. They don't need your help.
Exactly. Hey, the last thing I want to talk about before we finish up was, and maybe you had heard about this. I had not heard this before Mark Jones brought it up on the ESPN broadcast, that Steph Curry in the past, according to Andrew Bogut on some podcast, said that Steph at halftime, if he had a bad half, he'd go on social media and, you know, take look at Twitter or whatever and see some negative remarks and then come out and, you know, have a great second half. And I don't know, maybe he checked it out at some point, because, again, he came through in the clutch. I had no idea that Steph did that. And, you know, an interesting way to motivate yourself.
No, I was thinking when I heard that, over all the games I've covered over the years, I wonder if he read one of my tweets and he got fired up and went, you know, I scored 26 in the third quarter because of one of my tweets. Probably not, because I haven't had much negative to say about the guy over the past decade. Just a few little things here and there. I mean, you know, he's sloppy with the ball sometimes. But, yeah, I think what he's looking at is, especially at the start of this year, well, Steph is undermining his legacy with his team now, and he's just not going to be the player he was before. And Steph was like, oh really? Well, I'm going to drop 62 on you. It was right after that chatter that he dropped 62, and then he drops 57. Players will use whatever they need to use to get them motivated. And you could say, well, yeah, he loves the game, so he's already motivated. But, I mean, it's a long season. You're playing hundreds of games in your career. You can't be fired up every night. So I think that's a sort of a motivational tool that he uses, and he uses it pretty well. That doesn't surprise me at all that he would be scanning the Twitter feed or social media on halftime, not the least bit. So and look what happens. Usually it's a good thing for the Warriors.
By the way, my favorite Curry move this year that, I mean, I guess he's used it before, but he seems to be doing it more often this year without Klay Thompson around, is the drive to the basket, and then, you know, the defender gets there, he backs up, and the defender thinks he's going to shoot, he kind of looks up at the basket, and then he just drives right by the defender. So, I mean, he just completely breaks his ankles without a crossover. I mean, this is a drive, stop, back up, oh, I'm going to shoot it, no, I'm driving to the basket, and you're just toast.
Well, that's just it. I mean, because he's such an outside shooting threat, you got to account for that first. You're also trying to keep him, at least initially, to go for the basket, but it's harder as a defender to back up and then move forward again and then back up again, all right? You know, it's Steph's got the ball. He knows what he's going to do. The defender doesn't. And so, especially someone who's still as quick as Steph is, and this is the one area that he's always been a great shooter, right? But this is the one area of the game where he's gotten so much better over the years. He's gotten a little stronger so that he can take the pounding under the bucket, and he's so much of a better finisher than he was earlier in his career.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he would have some pretty spectacular finishes. He could be pretty tricky. But now, you know, he's getting fouled. He's hitting the floor a lot. And he's taken the wear and tear of that over the years. And doesn't seem any worse of the wear, at least so far. This is why he is again in the MVP conversation, and why his numbers, his efficiency numbers, are historically high, right up there with his MVP years. And it's, you know, we thought it'd be a fun year anyway, watching Steph play and how he interacted with his new team. I frankly didn't know he was going to be this good. I thought he was going to be good for sure. I had no doubt about that. But to be up to this spectacular level, I mean, he is once again putting himself at the front of the conversation of players in this league.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just been amazing. And now you got the schedule, Ray, where, you know, you go road Orlando, Charlotte, Knicks, Indy, back home for one against Charlotte, then back on the road for Lakers, Portland, Phoenix. I mean, wow, this is some kind of road swing here.
You better pile up those wins on that first road swing, you know, and playing, coming home as well. You know, the Orlando and Charlotte are teams that they should beat. The Knicks are better, but they should beat them. Indiana's going to be tough. They're a tough matchup for the Warriors. They're a very good defensive team. Then you got Charlotte again. I mean, that's five games where you got to get at least three wins, I think, and hopefully four, before you have to go to L.A. and go to Portland and go to Phoenix. Because, you know, if things go wrong or you're missing a player or two, you could lose all three of those games. I think the Warriors aren't looking at it that way. They're not even looking at the schedule just yet. But let's say you go in these next five games, you go 4-1. Okay, well, you're 20-14. That's a lot better position to be in going into those road games in L.A. and Portland and Phoenix. Now, Phoenix had a real rough loss the other night. They've been playing really good basketball. And they're a good, better defensive team as well. So they caused the Warriors problems. And we'll see how the Lakers are with Anthony Davis at that point. But, of course, they have LeBron. And Damian Lillard in Portland is lethal. He always gets fired up when he comes to Oakland as well, and when he plays the Warriors. So, you know, you look at those eight games on balance, and let's say you get out of those eight games 5-3, I think you'd be real happy with that.
Yeah.
Going to March 4th.
Yeah.
You know?
And I
that's
think
that's a goal to shoot for.
And I think they're pretty happy with the season overall right now anyway. What a win for the Warriors against the Heat. Just an amazing comeback. Ray, thanks a lot, and look forward to talking about these games next week.
Sounds good, Joe.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.